Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey, welcome to the 145th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode was brought to you by patrons Jordan Brady and Donald Evans. Thanks, guys. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Oren Kaplan. And today we have Ira Rosenzweig on the podcast. Do we ever say pod? We have him on the podcast.
I don't think so, no.
He is a director that's directed a ton of things. He's done a ton of promos and a ton of commercials, and he has worked with every celebrity that is worth working with. He has recently done some stuff with Kevin Hart. He directed a Super Bowl commercial with Peyton Manning. He's worked with Seth Rogen.
He's got a great story about coming up from the world of promos into commercials and then segueing a little bit into scripted. He runs his own production company, but also still works with other people as well. He's got a very interesting business model, and you guessed it, a ton of insight on what it takes to be a working director making commercials and promos.
My favorite part is when Ira and I team up on Matt about how we work with editors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think what's special about this show is that, like, we have different points of view. And, yeah, you know, two people can be wrong, one person can be wrong, you know, but two people can be wrong. I can't wait to talk to Ira. But before we get to that conversation, shall we talk about our Patreon?
Yes, we should. So we have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/justshootitpod. And it is a place you can go to if you like this podcast, feel like we're helping you out in some way and want to help us back. Give us a little bit of support for our live events, for our editors, for
a little scratch
making this podcast work.
Oren, I don't even know. How does Patreon work? What is it? I keep hearing us talk about it, and I have no idea.
It's like, honestly, when I first heard about it, I also was like, why would anyone give money to something that they get for free? And then I, like, hung out on Patreon, and I started seeing these, like, YouTubers I really like and various people on there that make really cool things. And I was like, I can give this person a dollar. I mean, I like what they're doing. I don't want them to stop doing it. So it's kind of like a keep on going, I like what you're doing type of website. But
it's
also
sort of like, it's like Kickstarter, but with a rolling monthly goal, basically.
And it's also, you get perks. You know, various patrons give various things depending on how much you're helping out. So you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/justshooterpod, and we appreciate you taking the time to do that. And now, without any further ado, we are going to talk to Ira R.
Ira Rosenzweig.
Okay, guys, we're rolling. We're sitting here with Ira Rosenzweig.
Close.
Rosenzweig.
Zweig.
God, it's way off. Rosenzweig.
It's all right. You and everybody else. It's all good.
Sorry.
No.
Drinking some Baileys on
the
rocks.
It's an appropriate way to start.
Yeah, it's a jolly episode of Just Shoot It here with Ira. So Ira, you are a commercial director.
Yes. Yes,
and
I am.
And you own your own production company.
That is true, yes.
So the Cliff Notes lightning round.
Uh-huh.
You were a guest on Jordan Brady's podcast, Respect the Process, which was where we get kind of the Cliff Notes. But basically, you came up in the world of promos, which is slightly different than commercials, but then segued into commercials as well.
That's correct. And I still do a lot of promos. I actually love doing promos. I know promos kind of gets a bit of a bad name sometimes. Mm-hmm. but we can get into that too. But yeah, I started at MTV Networks, I guess back in 2004 after doing a feature documentary that I worked on for about 2.5 years and realized very quickly feature documentaries are not for me.
You
so
know, you know what's cool is making money.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I had a very interesting story in that the guy, I ended up making a documentary, a musical documentary about this guy, John Falcon, who won $45 million in the New York lottery. So I actually had him fund the film.
Did you study film?
I did, yeah. I at first was a microbiology major. I actually was going to do a 6-year PhD MD program. You know, it was film was never something I even considered. I don't even think I really got into movies until high school.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, I don't think I saw Star Wars until I was in college. So,
yeah.
I was one of those
guys. You
didn't
miss much.
Yeah, I agree with you. Anyway, so I was a microbiology major, and then I was just on a whim, like, why don't I take a film production course? Because I started really loving movies and totally fell in love with it. Like, skipped organic chemistry for 2 months, and the rest was history. I mean, I double majored.
You know, OChem is like a famously fun class.
Yes,
too, so that's
yes,
a huge sacrifice to make.
I kind of like totally skidded by on the like the for the first third of the class because I had had the stuff in high school and I was like, this is totally cake. And then the harder stuff came and I was like, screw this.
You're like, wait, you can make movies?
Right. Yeah. So I finagled my way into a production course and, you know, I went to Penn State. I had no idea there was any kind of film production there, but luckily there was. There was, they had Bolex cameras. They had some Arris. You know, I think my junior and senior year, they got like the first Avids and stuff like that. So I just fell in love with it and dove in head first.
Okay, so then from that documentary, you went around the festival circuit. You realized you wanted to do scripted stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And well, then you went to MTV?
Yeah, I mean, I always knew I wanted to do scripted stuff. That's why I got into film. The funny thing is, I mean, I'm doing primarily comedy now, and I had never considered doing comedy. My senior thesis film was about a convicted child molester moving home from prison, told from his point of view, and like not at least any intentional laughs in the entire thing.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, it was, I knew, you know, after I made the film, my friend was working at, I guess it was Nickelodeon to start. He had bounced around MTV Networks, but he got me a gig producing and editing just like clip spots for them. And that was cool because it was like, you come in, you get it done, you know, you have a day, it's done.
And like, what is that? That's you get footage, you get an episode of a show and you cut like kind of like a fun gag reel or something and put some graphics on it?
Yeah, there at first I think there were like Jimmy Neutron DVD releases. So like they would go like, on the head.
Jimmy Neutron's on DVD. What? You know.
That is exactly the spot.
Yeah.
I think they would put, it would be like trailers for the next Jimmy Neutron release that would appear at the beginning of the DVD, Jimmy Neutron DVD that is currently being put out. So that was, those were the first kinds of projects I was doing. And he then bounced over to Spike TV and got me another gig there. And, you know, I guess because I took a little bit of chutzpah, but I've realized I think that's kind of like maybe the most important thing to have as a director trying to get ahead in this business. But they gave me a script for a clip spot, and I said, do you mind if I rewrite that? I was like, the script isn't great. Do you mind if I rewrite it? So, of course, I rewrote it as something that needed to be shot. Mm-hmm. And they said, what are you doing? There's a $2,500 budget. It's all post. And I said, I will shoot this. If you don't like it, I will pay for it and like do what you originally intended. And they said, fine. Luckily, they liked it. And after that, I kind of after a couple spots became the go-to comedy director at Spike TV.
So this, I told you off mic that we were going to pump the brakes a little bit.
Sure.
Here and there.
Sure, sure.
I think this is a good example because it's easy to hear that story and be like, oh man, like, you know, the opportunities are just kind of like presenting themselves, but it's hard to explain how crappy that job is. Is what I'm really getting at. It's like because I know exactly where you were editing.
Right.
You're kind of in a dungeon with a bunch of other people.
Matt worked at Comedy Central.
I worked at Comedy Central, which is also owned by MTV Networks.
Right.
So like same buildings, same, you know, like editing bays are like not the most inviting places, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of, people get shoved down there and then it's like, oh, you like you said, $2,500, just fucking cut the thing and we'll note it and we'll be done.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an inviting environment for pitching anything. You know what I mean? Like, your job was not to rewrite anything or to suggest shooting anything. It was like you were taking a big step, and I hazard to guess that no one else was doing anything like that.
If there's like a sausage factory in Hollywood, it is this, right?
Yeah.
This is like
the
equivalent of if you work in the warehouse for Amazon and you're moving packages and you say to someone like,
you're like, hey,
hey,
Jeff,
I think like we can improve this toaster oven in here.
Yeah, yeah.
I can speak because I mean, this is jumping forward, but like I then went this, I was doing permalance work for Spike TV at this time that we're talking about. When we were trying to have kids, we had to do IVF, and just to pay for the IVF, I decided to go back to be on staff just to get the health insurance to pay for two rounds of it.
Right.
So like when I was doing that, do you ever hear of Repo Games? I mean, literally the worst TV shows on earth. I'm editing. I'm editing 37 revisions of a clip spot that this is every week.
Yeah.
And I'm working for an idiot who like, you know, makes me go to 37 just out of frustration. I like go over his head and send cut one to his boss and that's approved, you know, like, so that's the hell that that job is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know how much of that I can get into.
I think Oren's point of like, it's a sausage factory. So
Good
on them for saying, hey, yeah, we'll take it. You know, there are plenty of people out there who would be like, no, or just like even good people on a bad day who would have rejected you. You know? So I think there's a special mixture of like people saying yes and being open to your talent and your chutzpah and your drive and also having it in the first place. But so like what I'm saying is that if you feel like you're in like a dead end Hollywood production job, there's, you can make your own opportunities. Basically.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I did. I've talked about this a lot on the podcast. But one of my first big paid gigs was a CPR training video. It was like a 2-hour video. It had like a $25,000 budget.
Right.
And it was mostly about, you know, what speed you should do, compressions and breaths and all that stuff, Heimlich maneuvers or whatever they call them, chest thrusts. And I was like, I want to make all the dramatizations like amazing, you know, like we got a jib arm, we're going to shoot, like just make it super dramatic, slow-mo. And the people were like, whatever you want. Like we don't really care. Like just get sure to the just the kid drowns and they pull him out of the pool. So that wasn't like my big moment of discovery, but I do think part of what makes you a director is like your job is to like make things better than they are, especially
better than they need to be.
When you're like get a script for Modern Family and it's like all Emmy award winning writers and everything, there's, you know, you have to be beholden a little bit to the powers that be, but when you are kind of in the trenches a little bit like lower on the totem pole, when, you know, they just expect a bare minimum and you're delivering like way more.
Yeah. If you would, if you just cut the script that they gave you, it would have been fine.
Right.
And you would have done a good job and eventually you would have gotten hired full time once it became illegal to have you for permalance.
Like, I mean, and that's the literally the most frustrating thing about working in a place like that is most people are just there to get through the day and make your sausages.
I made a web series on nights and weekends.
So I mean, that's what I would fight against all the time, even in terms of production, where it's like, okay, we have a $25,000 budget for this thing, and I'm like, okay, I want to do a period piece about Steven Seagal as a kid for this stunt they were doing called Seagal Sunday. And like it would constantly, like, some producers were great and they'd be like, let's make it happen, and you're the other times you're matched with other producers who they just wanted get the job done, and I would constantly butt heads with people like, why do you need to do this? It doesn't have to be this difficult. And I'm like, I'm sorry, like, I just want to make this better.
You
know what I mean? I think
100%
butting heads is like my favorite type of work environment because it means people care about stuff, you know?
Right.
At least some people care about stuff. To me, when everyone's like, yeah, that's fine, that's good enough, that works, it's like nothing great is being made.
No.
Yeah.
No. And butting heads is fine, but also there's you know, when it goes too far and it just becomes an incredibly uncomfortable work environment, like that's not the best either.
Well, we had Peter Atencio on the podcast.
I listened to that episode.
And he was saying they didn't even want him to be at the Key and Peele offices and he would just come anyway and just like be chiming in and just giving in his 2 cents and directing things, and they just couldn't get rid of him.
Yeah, that's you've got to do it. I mean, in one, either that way or another, it's like, if you've got to be your own force of nature or nobody's going to give you anything. So
tell us then, how do you make, you just kind of become their go-to guy, right? But you're doing promo spots still, which is, it's a different science, right? So sometimes you can inspire some creative where it's a young Steven Seagal for this, you know, these Sunday series or whatever, but oftentimes it's a little bit more like, all right, you've got 30 minutes with the talent in between.
Right.
Like after lunch or something like that. Were you ever doing those sorts of spots or no?
Early days at Spike, there wasn't much talent to work with.
Oh, because, that's true. Yeah. You know,
so it was
a lot. Yeah, it was like CSI reruns and like
exactly.
Didn't you guys have
shows?
The Man Show? Adam Carolla and Jimmy Kimmel?
That was Comedy Central, I think.
Yeah, that was Comedy Central.
Oh, it was?
They had Mansers. I did a lot of Mansers.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, they didn't have that. But it was like, yeah, reruns, reality shows. They do like stunts where they'd have a block of Steven Seagal movies and a block of Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. And those were actually the great days because like I still look back on those spots and they're some of my favorite spots I've ever done because just the creative freedom that you had. Like my boss at the time, Neil Shermans, who's been at Viacom forever, you know, he let me write, produce, direct, edit, full campaigns. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you know, I guess that they needed to develop a certain sense of trust. But, you know, after a while, I was doing the brand films for the upfronts, like when they introduced the new tagline, Get More Action. Like, there was some really awesome stuff that I thought we were making. And if you're asking, like, how that happened, like, so after the first one, there was a weekly writers meeting. And so, like, one of the things I was tasked with was World's Most Amazing Videos. Literally, it's just, like, car crashes and just, like, crazy and usually awful stuff. And so I was just, like... Again, like I didn't, even when I was there, I was not intending to do comedy, but I guess there was something that just drew me to short form comedy. Like, and there were, you know, commercials on the air that the ones that I liked the most were funny. And so I was like, you know, I remember vividly like being in a pitch meeting and saying, you know, the head writer, Scott Rosenblatt, you know, calls on me. He's like, okay, what do you have for World's Most Amazing Videos? And I was like, they wanted to do something like user generated, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, so we're in a basement. Like we're going to shoot this on like VHS cameras. We're going to like the world's dirtiest basement. And there's a huge fat man standing there shirtless. And then, you know, I take them through literally, it's a 15 second spot, but I'm describing moment by moment what's happening. You can see this on my website. It's still up there. I've divided it up. I think it's like, it's in like the crazy section. I forget exactly what I called this, what this, the section is. But anyway, he's there. He's got, he's shirtless, but Captain Amazing is written on his chest and he's got a cape. And like, then there are two little people that start breakdancing. And one guy has a mallet and they're beating his stomach. And the other guy runs around, busts through a sign that says World's Most Amazing Videos and comes through it and presents something to camera. And everybody's just looking at me like, what is wrong with you?
What is happening?
Scott, God bless him, he's like, great, do it. You know, like, how much money do you need? $2,000. Great, here you go. Like, so that the cheaper you can do things and the, you know, that will allow you more creative freedom. But like, so that was the next thing. And I think after that, Scott, they loved the spot. Scott really trusted me after that. And so he starts coming to me, what do you think of this idea? Mm-hmm. And we start working together on campaigns and things like that. And that's how it builds. Like, I guess there are different ways to come at it. You can kind of do the tried and true, like, you know, a lot of people there are kind of company men, there's probably the best way of putting it. And they kind of toe the line and do what's expected of them. Or I think you can kind of push it a little bit and try to break some boundaries and do some crazy things and get noticed that way. So that was the way I went about it. I was never, I don't think ever really cut out to work in kind of a bureaucratic work environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I did work at Spike TV for quite a while, Permalance, and then I came back for a few years to work there full time on staff. And then one day my wife called me and basically just said, you're miserable. We're moving to LA.
Oh, so this was all in New York.
This is all in New York. Yeah.
And how did she know that LA was the answer to all your problems?
So I had representation. After I did a number of promos, I won an award called the Rocket Award. So there's an organization called Promax BDA, which is kind of like the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences of the promo world, right? Mm-hmm. So every year there's a conference and awards given out. And in 2007, I won an award called the Rocket Award, which is like given to the best new producer director in promos. At that point, I was like, I have a reel of work. I didn't get into filmmaking to make promos.
Sure.
Why don't I look for representation? And a couple of friends had some connections at the agencies, and I first got a meeting at Endeavor, and then you know how it works out here. It's all about heat. You tell someone this new director's meeting with Endeavor. Right. Oh, UTA wants to take a meeting with you. CAA wants to take a meeting with you. You start getting management meetings. So I came out, got representation, and basically they were all saying to me the whole time, like, you got to move out here. You got to move out here. And I'm like, I can't move out here. My wife is an attorney. She has her own practice. It's really hard for her. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So it was really hard for her to move out here. Yeah. And I never thought I'd even like LA. Like, I'd like coming to visit, but
Doesn't smell like garbage. It's warm all the time.
You know, it's funny. When I go back to New York now, I'm just like, how the hell did I live here
I
so long?
I love carrying groceries.
But so I said, look, I'm not moving out here, but I'll live here for a month. And, you know, my manager was like, okay, I'm going to literally get you like 5 meetings a day, every day for a month. And
where was your manager?
I was at Bender Spink at the time. And so that's what I did. I just kind of did the water bottle tour for a month, met everybody. And the crazy thing was,
when you say met everybody, you're like meeting at ABC, NBC, Universal,
so Viacom, no TV
production companies.
No TV. It was all movies, and not really
Lionsgate, Miramax, like that type of company.
It was more production companies, production companies that make films, but like really well known.
George Clooney's production company.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I had the meeting at like Smokehouse or whatever it was at the time, but yeah, those Mosaic. So I met with all those companies, and I met with Elaine Goldsmith Thomas's company. Do you know, she used to like represent Madonna and Julia Roberts and Jennifer Lopez. She then had her own company, and I had never even written a script before, but I met her, someone at her company, an exec at her company.
Well, you had written all the scripts like in your promo work though.
Yeah, but there are good ideas there, and maybe you can write a good 30-second scene, but there's a big difference between doing that and writing a feature.
Sure.
Somehow, one of her execs said, Elaine has an idea for a movie. I'd love you to come and talk to her about it. So Elaine's actually in New York, and went in to meet with her in her New York office, and she had an idea for a movie called Sloppy Kitty about female professional mud wrestling.
Oh, okay.
So I read kind of a treatment, and I don't know how it happened. They hired me to write the script for that.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I had...
Talk about a rocket award, right?
I had no sample. So,
but you pitched a take on it.
I pitched a take on it, but if I remember correctly, the take did not go over so well. I basically wrote exactly what was in this treatment. So that was an interesting experience.
Was it a Writers Guild thing?
Yeah, I got into the guild, got paid really well to write it.
Wow.
And it was...
This is a few years ago, right?
This was 2008.
Oh, yeah, so not that long ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago. So that was my first writing experience.
Wow.
Yeah.
You wrote the screenplay, and then you're doing all these promos. At what point do you decide to move out to LA then?
So that's 2008. So I then, after writing that script, went back and directed some other promos for Spike, started directing promos for some other networks. Mm-hmm. Then went back to work.
In the Viacom family or?
All over the place.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how did word get out? Like, how did you start booking those other ones?
That's a good question. I must have just sent, because I mean, I could tell you certainly in the last few years how I've gone about getting work. Mm-hmm. But I must have just kind of looked people up, sent some spots over.
Yeah.
I was working with another management company after Bender Spink called Prolific, and a manager there, I believe, it was a film and TV manager, but she was sending it to some production companies in New York who also did, commercials and promos. So I think that's how I started meeting some other people.
Gotcha.
But, yeah.
You've just been doing promos for a while. What was your first commercial?
The first commercial, I mean, it's funny because it's a kind of a hazy world now where like there's integrated marketing at networks. And so like I had done a lot of work at Spike where it was like Spike TV integrated with Geico or integrated with Toyota. And because I wanted to be doing straight commercials, I would take those spots, edit out. Like I would also, because I'd be editing these things, I'd have the masters and everything. So I would literally do another cut where there's no mention of Spike TV in it. Right. So it looked like a straight commercial.
Right.
And so I would kind of beef up my reel that way. Mm-hmm. Back in 2000, I guess this is around 2002, 2007, 2008, I signed with a commercial production company. Mm-hmm. They got me one job in a year.
Yeah.
By the way, I feel like it's kind of a common story, right? That we hear.
Yeah.
Like your first commercial production company One job's not bad.
Your second, yeah. Like, it's impressive that you got one.
Yeah. I mean, it was a promo. It was.
Oh. Yeah. And were you pitching a lot, or was that the only thing you, like, that, wrote a treatment
there
on?
There might have been another thing I wrote a treatment on or I met someone on, but it was really not, not much going on. And so.
But you were still doing your promo stuff in the meantime.
I was working at Spike, I think, at the time. So it was fine, and I didn't have children, and I didn't have a mortgage, so like it wasn't so terrible. If that situation happened today, it would be horrible. So I think that poisoned me to the idea of being exclusive to any roster.
Interesting.
Yeah. And to this day, like, I've met with a bunch of really great production companies that if you told me like 10 years ago I'd be turning down,
sure,
I would have said you're crazy. But I have to say to them now, like, unless you can literally give me a pretty substantial retainer, I can't be on your roster.
Yeah. But do you tell them, like, if a pretty bird or like a director's bureau or someone comes to you and says, like, hey, we think you'd be great for a job, can we pitch you on it?
So this is, I should be clear about this. So I have my own company. Those are jobs where, like, someone knows me as a director and they say, like, we definitely want you to direct this project. Which production company do you want to go with? If they don't know that I have a production company, and I'm like, well, I have my own production company, and we just run it through the production company. Right. I have a lot of promo.
And do you make more money in that?
Oh, yeah.
Instance?
For sure.
Because you get the production fee.
Exactly. Not only that, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why it's nice to have your own production company. We scale up or down depending upon what we're doing. There was a time where we were, like, shooting and editing, like, three things at the same time. And, like, so we got a lot of office space. I had two other editors working. Like, everybody was working in the productions out of there. But, like, no, we stay nimble and small unless we need to scale up.
If somebody comes to you because they want you to direct, then you will bring it into your company. But you will also happily work with other companies?
Yeah. I mean, I think I've done a little over 20 jobs this year. Five of them were through my company, and the other 15 or so were for probably another 9 or 10 production companies.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And were they companies that you've worked with regularly?
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with a bunch of them over the years. Like, one is Canyon Road Films, and Laura Wicks is a producer there. I've worked with her since I moved to L.A. There's another company, Bacon & Sons, that I work with a lot. Good One. I do a lot of True TV work. I think, like, 12 of the jobs this year probably were between just ABC, ESPN, True TV, and Paramount Network, which Spike became. Spike,
yeah.
They're all directing jobs, and I usually try to also do the posts. And, like, you know, this is one of those things that can sometimes get me into trouble, but, like, I don't know about you guys, but I've been editing for a long time, so, like, I have a very clear picture of, like, how I think the footage should all cut together. A lot of times I'm very lucky, even with the Super Bowl spot that I did. Like, I worked with a production company called Moving Parts on a few other projects, and it was a unique situation where Moving Parts called me probably early December last year, and they were like, we're going to be producing a Super Bowl spot with Universal Parks and Resorts. They love your reel. Do you want to do this? No treatment, no anything.
Ooh, that's the best.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah.
That spot's really fun, by the way. I just did some Disney World promos, and I was, when I saw your spot, I was like, oh man, you did some cool things I should have done. There was a lot of regret in my mind.
Thank you. But yeah, that was a really cool experience. But I bring it up because, like, they also hired me to do all the posts, so I edited everything. I mean, that was pretty intense. There were a lot of cuts. But
so are you doing, like, client sessions and stuff?
So there was no intermediary agency. That was direct to client. And Universal Parks and Resorts has, like, an internal agency there.
I see.
So I was dealing with them on that level. And the great thing was, like, and I do this a lot, like, so I would edit it. I take it to Company 3 to do the color. I take it to Beacon Street to do the mix. Like, I literally see the whole thing through. And for that, was paid really nicely for it. Other times, I can't help myself. Like, if I see a rough cut that sucks, you know, sometimes the company will say, hey, we'd love to hear your notes. And I'll usually say, can you just give me the footage and let me cut it?
Yeah,
and
birds of a feather right here, you too.
Yeah, well, do you say, I mean, I learned the hard way. Now I just bring a hard drive to set every single time.
Yeah.
And actually, the shoot I just had on Friday, I was like, told the DIT, I was like, hey, here's my drive. It's 2 terabytes. You know, we're shooting on an Alexa ProRes. I'm like, I think it should all fit. And he's like, I don't know if it's going to fit. And then at the end of the day, he's like, okay, I got it all on there. Don't worry. And I got home to edit it, and it was just like the proxy files. So I can't color, so now I have to go finagle the raw files out of the production company. And to today I showed we were showing the client the edits, and I was like, is it cool if we show them my edit first real quick? Because, you know, you want them to love the spot.
Right.
You don't want them to be like, ugh, right. This didn't work. Like right
how are we going to fix this?
Yeah, and with, you know, any kind of one of these random editors that they hire, they're not putting in sound effects. They're not, like, mixing. The audio is, like, all over the place. You got, right. like, 7 tracks of audio. Like, why are we hearing, like, all the other actors' lobs on, like, you know, while...
That one right. always bumps me out.
You know, all the temp, like, text and graphics looks like they've just, like, placed them in the middle of the screen with no... thought right. whatsoever.
Well, let me ask you, like, so in a situation like that where you're basically just like taking the drive and then doing a cut, like how do you navigate that with the agency?
Well, so this is, so I've just told Matt this. I've been doing this like I did it on like my last 3 or 4 projects. What I'm finding is a lot of people are cutting in Premiere now for commercials, mm-hmm. which was not always the case.
Right.
But now that that is the case, I get the footage and like, let's say we shoot on Thursday or Friday or Wednesday, Thursday or Friday. Usually the first cut's not due till Monday. And so that weekend, I will do my cut, or I'll try to do it like the next day if I can, and I'll just send it to the agency producer and say, hey, you know, I was just messing around with the footage, and I love this, and I just like think, here's a couple takes, and I just, you know, this is how they cut together, and this is kind of how I pictured it. It's like, instead right. of sending
this
the editor notes.
This is how I pictured it, is the move.
And yeah, then, yeah. and now, I've even, like on this last job, I sent them my cut, and I sent them another cut that had the clip name, and the time code embedded into each shot.
I do that.
So I'm like, hey, you know, if you like any of my selects, exactly. like you can find them.
And I'll be like, I'm happy to send the Premiere project.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So today I was like, hey, can I just load my Premiere project into your system? Because I have like all these alt takes that I wanted right. to show them.
Yeah. Like, oh, I've got a string out, but I have my thoughts, but maybe yeah. they want
to
weigh in.
And by the end of the day, the producer's like, why don't we just hire you to edit this? I was like, yeah. Next time.
Yeah, and I have a gig coming up in a couple of weeks where it's like, okay, find out today that we got the job, and the immediate first thing I'm saying is, can I edit it? Or, and if not the full thing, can I at least do the first cuts?
And let me ask you, do you say, can I edit it? Or do you say, can my company do post on it? Like, are you open about the fact that you are the editor? Or
yeah, I'm totally open about it. I think I've realized that people actually like the fact. I mean, there are some people who are like, you're a director, why are you mm-hmm. editing this?
Yeah.
But this situation for this job, the production company I'm doing it for also has a post wing. Mm-hmm. So there's no, you know, it's I would only, you know, be the editor right. for that. So not even asking to see the whole thing through.
So I'm very jealous and curious about this whole thing for you guys, because I do the exact opposite, where I very rarely touch a keyboard unless I'm writing. Most of the time, I think that it sounds like this works out really well for you. Do you ever fear that you're missing out on the surprise element of an editor who isn't inside your head? Do you know what I mean?
There have been a couple of times where I get a cut back and I'm like, wow, this is...
like, oh, I didn't see that.
This is yeah. better. This is definitely better than what I would have done.
Yeah, yeah.
But the preponderance of times, it's usually, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
And so...
even today, I had, like, the editor had done one cut that was, like, better. He had, like, kind of accidentally, like, left out a line, and I was like, damn, this works even better without that line, mm-hmm. you know? But it's funny because the production company's like, hey, we got our editor working, like, let's try to lock this ASAP. Mm-hmm. And me, who's spent, like, 2.5 solid days just going through the takes and stuff, I tell the agency, like, hey, you know, now that we're waiting for notes, just make... like, I know this is the first cut, and like a great idea for an edit can come from anyone, you know? And if somebody thinks something feels too long, then to me that means like something isn't working. But I think for you, Matt, like, you know, I've seen a lot of what you've done in the past mm-hmm. 3 years, and I know it's all good, but I think there are a few spots that if you had the project, like,
yeah, yeah.
they would make it to the top of your website yeah, or yeah. on your reel or things.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
Because the music is not right, or the colors right. just seems weird, you know,
the
or
the music
titles.
So off, like, there was a spot I did a few years ago where it was like, I could not understand, like, how in any world does this music work? Mm-hmm. And like, so I did a director's cut of that and put a different track in, and it was just like, felt it was a completely different spot. I mean, do you ever feel like when you're...
well, music, I would never, I feel like I would always get things like, at worst, 90% there, because I session pretty regularly. I do a lot of like the preliminary, like, hey, I can't wait to be involved in this, I'm gonna make myself available, mm-hmm. like I'm doing them a favor, mm-hmm. you know. But I want to basically deliver a director's cut that I'm really feeling great about, and then let them deal with the back and forth of like the client, S&P, all of that kind of stuff that can kind of muck it up. And I'll take that director's cut with me. Mm-hmm. But it probably hasn't gone through color or sound yet.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And to me, I know take six is like, in my opinion, way better than take five, but the continuity is off and there's a boom mic in there. And the editor is never, ever, ever going to make that work. But I can throw it into After Effects real quick and remove the boom, or change something or reframe.
Yeah.
I'm like constantly.
Tell them we to did reframe
a,
too, but.
We did a dolly move pushing in, and I know it's just missing a little intensity. Let's just do like a little, like post 25% scale or whatever, you know.
Sure, sure.
That the editor would never kind of like fuck around.
You can do all
like
of that in a session. I think that there's a threshold where, like, I am constantly repoing, I'm constantly throwing in, like, additional moves. I think the point of, like, oh, there's a boom in the shot, or, like, we need to do a digital split screen, that's where you get into stuff. Where
but it's really interesting. Like, it's for me, it's either or, like, all or nothing. Like, either I'm doing the cut, or, like, I never see the cut until it's on the air.
Oh, interesting.
And it seems like you guys have had a different situation where you're at least sitting in on sessions and stuff, which is great.
I'm more like you. Because I can't, people don't like it when I sit next to them, because I'm always whenever they go to the bathroom, they come back, I'm like, rechange all their keyboard shortcuts.
Right.
I make it from the pitch a sales point of like, I'm a soup to nuts director. Like, I'm going to see through. Like, I really care about color in particular. Like, I'm going to be there for all of it. And you don't have to worry about that costing you extra or anything like that. But like, I am an asset to you.
And they see that as an asset? Or do you feel like sometimes?
I mean, maybe I don't get the job if they don't see it as an asset.
Right.
You know?
Because I wonder a lot of the time, like...
But so many times it's a Chicago agency or New York agency, and they just want posts to be close to them. And that's when you really have nothing. And that's when sending the premiere project is, like, extra important. I did this job in Houston. They still didn't take a lot of my notes. But what's nice is if they're, like, 80% following your cut, then you can get, like, their colored version. And then you just, like, the two or three shots you changed, you can, like, color it to match their stuff.
Right.
And I just, like, I'm always begging them for stems. The audio stems is, like, the thing I fight
that's
the hardest for.
Right.
Because everything else I can rebuild myself really easily.
The color, now that you mention it, like, there have been so many times where some of the production companies I work with have post arms, and they're like, I'm like, what's the plan for color? And they're like, oh, our editor's going to color.
Yeah,
and I'm
just
like, I'm like, I can get you like pay $500 and you'll get like amazing color, and they don't want to do that. And I'm just like, I just don't understand.
Is that a favor rate, or is that something you can one of us up?
No, it's definitely a favor rate, but like, yeah, it's I don't get it. Cause like they don't, it seems like people don't understand like half of cinematography these days, I think, is almost in the color session. And so,
I always joke, and it's true. It went from like, color is really important, save some money for color, give us money for color, to them being like, oh, we have notes on color now. Like, the switch is like, it's not important, we don't care at all, to like, oh, no, we have to weigh in now. Like,
When they finally do,
it's like, oh, great. Like, now I'm getting notes on how magenta that image is.
Right.
Yeah. I find this editor, like, those Keebler spots I did, they didn't color at all. Like, they just put them in. What a lot of people don't get is like what you see on the monitor on set is very different than what it will look like on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? And they'll fall in love with like the dailies and like what they're seeing these cuts. And then when you color it, sometimes it's like, well, that doesn't look anything like what I've been seeing. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the point.
But the contrast on like Rec 709, whatever broadcast monitor just looks different than a computer monitor.
Totally. Have you guys, I think I just read a Movie Maker magazine article about how Matty Libatique started set grades, specific grades for each scene in A Star Is Born. And I love, like, I'll do a shoot grade if I can, like, if it's fancy enough, basically. Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever do that? Because then you're pretty close to...
I feel like that's, we talk at the pre-pro or at some point, you know, like, we're going to set looks, right? Mm-hmm. And then you never have the time to set looks.
Yeah, fair enough.
At least that's in my experience. Luckily, that's been a lot recently where I know, like, I'm going to be taking it to color and I don't really care. Like, mm-hmm. I'll have some kind of control over it.
Well, if you're doing the post, then.
Right. Yeah. But, no, I would love to.
It depends on the budget and the DP. Like, on that Jeep job, we had a tent with a DIT, and the DP would go was basically spent most of his time in the tent. And they're just like dialing things the whole time.
Yeah.
And then we get the files and it's beautiful on set. And we get the file and I'm like kind of messing around with my own footage. Then we see the editor's cut and the color is just like horrendous.
Yeah, just you got to get them that LUT first.
Yeah. And they're like,
then the client is in love with it.
Oh yeah. Right. We didn't use that LUT. The client really, we just, you know, they like start from scratch, which are like,
right.
Why?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, and they don't care about it.
Again, that's a reason to session. Because then you can be like, hey, you know, I think the DP said a LUT already. I'll get it for you.
Well, on color, it's different than in the edit. To me, the edit is like you're saying that I can ask someone to do like a reframe in a session or just go to like, you know, can you keyframe that from 100 to 125% the scale? And they'll do it. And then it's like, I'm like, actually do like 100 to 130%. Let's try like 115. I might have overshot.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, can you do move it up? And like, you get like 3 or 4 tries at that. But if I'm doing it myself, I will do 50 different versions.
Right, totally.
Yeah, I'll mess with it. Like even today, like I was like, can you move that title up a little bit? And I kept like apologizing to him because I kept like doing this thing where I'm like, move it a little bit. And I was like, no, go back. And then,
you know what though? I think if you do it right, and look, it's a personality thing. Sometimes they are going to hate it. But like, I think most of the time, if you show that you're appreciative, like they like nerding out. They like getting it perfect. Like you don't become an editor to like just fuck around.
I did one thing today where I was like, we were working all day together. He was great. And then I was like, you know, he had like all the tracks on, the audio tracks. I was like, can we just like turn off this like boom track that looks like the boom is nowhere near the audio that we're listening to? And he like locked all these tracks. He took like 5 steps to do it. And I was like, would it annoy you if I tell you how to do that in 1 step? And he's like, no, tell me. I was like, you know, if you hold down like the option key and you click on that, whatever. I told him and he was like, oh, awesome. Thanks.
You give him a keystroke.
And then the next time he just did it his way again.
I mean, there's
but he seemed super receptive. And if somebody told me like that spacebar trick on the iPhone or something, I love learning new shortcuts, new tricks. And I was asking him like how he has some way of like cutting clips real quick with the keyboard that I'd never seen before. So I don't know. Right. I'm all into it.
No, I've like working with some editors when you're working with them like that, they're definitely appreciative. But like, I know, like, no matter how polite I am or, you know, whatever I'm teaching them, like, it's definitely annoying, I'm sure.
Well, so, you know, I realized the move that I'll do is I'll make sure that they get fancy lunch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'll be like, oh, like, hey, where are we getting that Postmates? Right. And like, normally editors get stuck with like, I don't know, the Subway down the street. Mm-hmm. So like if there's a little treat involved with me being there.
Right.
Matt treats editors like dogs pretty much.
No, man, like they're best friends.
And Ira and I just assume they're not going to be as good as well, anyway, so back to Ira. So what's your deal now? Like how are all these companies still hiring you?
So yeah, we were talking about networking before. So, you know, I was working at Spike TV full time, get the call from my wife. This is summer 2014. You know, you're miserable. Let's move to LA.
Oh, so you haven't been out here that long.
I've only been here for a little over 4 years. Okay. Wish I moved out here much sooner. Like the career just completely shot off like a rocket.
Oh, that's interesting. From New York.
Yes.
To Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much more.
Like, oh, that's weird.
We were just talking about this yesterday, about how if you're in another film town, like, it's not as important to move to LA from New York as it would be from, like, Madison, Wisconsin.
I mean, I think there's a vast difference. And to be fair, to New York, though, like, I wasn't really looking as hard for work there. I kind of fell into Viacom. I was trying to do some other things.
You were going to Broadway shows. You're reading a lot of pizza.
Right, every day. Yeah. But moved out here, and I don't think I made a penny for 2.5 months. And I was just networking and networking and networking. And you ask, like, how was I networking? I basically, you know, redid my website and just through different organizations, looked at their directories. And you see, like, again,
Which organizations?
So, again, Promax BDA, they have a website. They have, a member directory. And I literally went through the whole thing, made a database. And you just, it's about shameless self-promotion. To this day, I'm just shamelessly self-promoting. My Facebook account is literally just all about my work. Like, you'll see shots of my kids and my wife as well. That's usually because she's posting them and tagging me. I hate social media. Like, I'm just using it to say, here's the stuff I've done.
Check out this cool thing.
Yeah, and I've become such a douche about it. Like, if I, if, like, myself from, like, 5 years ago probably would look at me today and be like, what are you doing? But it gets work. Like, literally, the day I post something, I get a call for the next job.
Yeah, I gotta get better at that.
Yeah, and I used to be very, I used to really curate what I was doing. Because, I mean, let's be honest, like, of the work that I've done this year, some of it I think is great, some of it is not. But I'm still posting the stuff that I don't think is great. I'm just not drawing as much attention to it. Mm-hmm. I've realized that people, and I may be wrong about this, but it seems like people like to see that you're working a lot more than you're only doing awesome
you're
stuff.
You're in demand. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, ideally, you're only doing awesome stuff and working a ton.
Right.
But,
you know,
we should all be so lucky.
So, anyway, yeah, getting back to when I first moved to LA, like, so I would use these directories and just send out these emails. And, like, if you send out 100 emails and just get one response, at least that's one response in a meeting and then someone who knows you. Like, some of these are very long gestating relationships. So, someone,
what does that first email say?
Probably back then it was like, you know, I'm a director. Here's some of my work. I just moved to LA. I'd love to have a meeting with you. I'd love to take you to lunch or coffee or something and just talk, you know, that kind of thing.
And is it a blanket email? Or are you saying like, oh, hey, I think we have this friend in common. How specific are you for each
I'm putting person? Their name. It's hey, dear, so, or, you know, hey, so and so. But that's as personal as it gets, unless there is some kind of connection. And some, you know, sometimes there are. But yeah, it's just literally like pounding the pavement. And just from doing that over the years and going to the Promax conferences and just like you really start developing a Rolodex. And I just really I'm lucky at this point that I know most of the creative directors in at all the networks. So I've really worked for I mean, there's only a few places that I haven't done work for on the promo side. And the commercial end of it is really picking up as well. Like every year it's kind of exponentially growing.
And do you have reps?
I had reps for my company. And it's really an interesting thing. And
when we say reps, you mean sales reps.
Yes.
So just a reminder to our audience, you can hire these people that will basically find jobs for you to bid on.
Right. I've realized, so, I mean, the industry is in a weird place. And like, I'm again, lucky that I can kind of do this, but like, so most of the time, obviously, like you get a call from a sales rep and they say, there's a job at this agency. Here are the boards, or a lot of times they don't even have the boards. And it's like, this is what the project is. Put together a reel for this. So you put together a reel, they send it off. The success rate of being shortlisted and then the success rate from being shortlisted to getting a job, I find is like so small compared to this year. There wasn't one job that I triple bid and did a treatment on. Like, it was all, like, I knew that they wanted to work with me. It's
and
really
that's because of those relationships, basically.
Yes. Like, especially in the promo world, like, treatments are not expected at all. I mean, sometimes they'll ask you for it, but they'll pay you for it. So,
which is insane. Yeah. Well, I mean, not insane. It's cool and insanely appropriate.
Right. I mean, I just feel like, you know, we can get into that whole treatment thing too. But, like, I won't do treatments anymore on spec. Like, I won't.
At all?
For no.
If someone's like, hey, we got like a, you know, Nike campaign, $5 million.
If they single bid me, I'll do it. Like, I'm lucky enough that like I get enough work now and I'm busy a lot that like I would much rather devote my time, excuse me, to the actual project that's been awarded rather than speculative work. I just feel like I know agencies are taken advantage of by clients and they kind of pass it down the chain, but like the whole expectation of treatments, I think, is completely ridiculous at this point. Who wants to read a 30-page treatment about a 30-second commercial? Like, I just think it's completely
insane. I can tell you who wants to write it.
Yeah.
This guy.
Do you enjoy it, or you're being sarcastic?
No, Oren does love it.
I mean, I hate it, but I hate that it's unpaid, and I kill myself over them, but I do do like a 30-page treatment.
It's
like
hard,
my normal treatment.
Right. It is hard. It's but hard. You like it.
Well, when I get the job, I have already thought so much about it that I feel I have this like such a high level of confidence, you know, going into the job.
Right.
But when I don't get the job,
also appreciate them as their own object.
Oh, yeah. I like like to show people my treatments. I'm like, but check out this treatment I made.
You're a visual effects guy. Like, I'm sure your like design background is pretty strong. So
not formal, but I am a big admirer of
design. He's better at Photoshop than we are.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so I like fonts, you know, typography and that stuff.
You're right. I mean, if you enjoy it, that's awesome. But like, I used to like put my heart and soul into treatments and like treat it like a spot. And you know, I go to look for images and there is never the right image. Like always something wrong with an image. And I heard you say that you Photoshop things, which is awesome, but I'm not great at Photoshop. So it's like trying to find the right image. And
right. Or I take pictures. But yeah.
Right. And then it's like the agency gets attached to something and I'm like, you know, a treatment at its best, I think, is a snapshot of one day of how you would like approach something. Mm-hmm. But I feel like when you get into a project, that's going to evolve. Like the way you approach it is going to evolve. And then you're, you know, collaborating with creatives and they're bringing things to it. And you, like, that's the other thing about it. Like I don't ever want to feel locked in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I don't think the treatment, even though you set it up as this is how I would approach things. A lot of times I don't write like, this is how I want to cast this spot. To me, it's like, here are like the ideas I have about casting and here's how I usually work in casting. I found recently that just talking about my method of working, people seem to like that because it like instills some sort of confidence in them that I've developed a method, even though it doesn't matter what it is.
Right.
But then image wise, to me, it's like less about this is what it's going to look like and more about when I think about your concept and I spend an entire day thinking about it, here are the things I look at to get inspiration from, you know? And so I will regularly have a page that has like 10 images on it because I can't find that one right image.
Right.
And I'll say like, I picked this image because I love the colors. I picked this image because this like little girl on the train tracks is like a different version of a little girl on train tracks than we've ever seen, you know, or whatever. I'll like kind of describe
And you feel that. Like they're retaining like...
Not in the writing, only when I walk them through it. And so when I don't get to walk them through it, I feel like it's like lost 80% of its effectiveness.
That's the other thing that makes me mental. So it's like you put all this time into it, right? And then you have to do a call where you walk them through it.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking to myself, did you read it?
Well,
and guess what? Half the time they have not even looked at it.
But it's also the call is the part I like, actually, because I think that there are a ton of really great directors out there. When you're triple bit, you're up against two other awesome people.
Right.
So this is your opportunity to show them why you're good to work with.
Right.
Because I think that's the job interview part of it.
Totally. Like, I mean, the old days it was you have a reel and you have a call or two and they award the job based on that. Calls are super important. Like, I know a lot of people on the first call, it's kind of like they're absorbing the information from the agency, but I will take the deck and I will like come up with like tons of questions and things that I want to do. And I will literally on that first call say like, here's how I would approach it. It's almost like walking them through a verbal treatment immediately. And it's like, but that's how I'm going to do it. And that's what you're going to get from me. And like sometimes turns them completely off. And other times they're like, you got the job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it just depends because I've done that before and totally turned them off. And I've, you know, a lot of times you're like this, I love the concept, but this one thing with like this blue guy walking around is just so dumb. Can we lose that? And they're like, no, that is the concept.
Right. Yeah. That's Mr. Blue.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember my first treatment. I wrote this treatment and the feedback I got from the production company was, the agency said like you had too many ideas and you're taking it like too far away from what they wanted to do. The next one I did, the feedback was, you didn't really have enough ideas.
Yeah, you didn't really plus it. I've gotten that note,
right,
too.
And so I'm just like, you never know what they're looking for. It's such a collaborative process. Like, look at my spots. I can only point to a couple that I've won on treatments. Like to compare treatments and to compete that way, it feels like a more of a graphic design competition rather than a way to judge how. Because I know that I definitely know. Like, I've been told that agencies like they're like you lost the job to this director because they loved her treatment. Like her treatment was amazing. They hated the spots. You know what I mean? Like I just don't know. I don't think there are any kind of like authentic representation of like how a spot's going to turn out.
Yeah.
Like,
right. And I want to understand that I also 1,000,000% hate this treatment thing. And like, you look at the jobs that Matt and I did this year and probably the best jobs by far, the ones that came from like existing relationships
right.
that we didn't yeah. write treatments on. But I guess it's not that I like making treatments, but I do take pride in them, if right. that makes any sense.
If I was good at it, I think I'd probably feel the same way. Mm-hmm. But like the actual, like I like the writing of it, like the prose, but.
Yeah. I wish you could just send a Word doc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you can.
Yeah.
No, actually, about the Word doc thing. Oh, yeah. Sometimes I will say, I'm going to send a director's statement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to send a treatment. And I think the shift in just kind of the semantics of it, then they are okay with just a Word doc. And maybe like a
they're always okay with just a Word doc. It just depends what the other people are sending them.
Right.
Yeah.
And what Jordan said when he was on here, he's like, from my experience being on kind of a couple different sides of the equation is, he's like, it's always usually comes down to like an idea. Like mm-hmm. they really like what this director said about this thing. And that's how beautiful it was and how great the graphic design was. You know, it is not that important. That said, I got one job and the client told me directly that I got it because my treatment was long. And Tim Nakashi had mm-hmm. a job like that too.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, it just seemed you cared the most about this project.
It looks like you're putting in more effort.
Yeah, you're right. Passionate.
Yes. Yeah.
And then on this job that I just did last week, I know it was just down to me and one other director. And I was talking to the producer about like why I got it and like what I put in the treatment and what I think the angle I took was. Because I knew the guy I was up against was like really, has, you know, really amazing work.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, no, it's just that one Jeep spot you had on your reel. They want this to be feel like that.
Right.
He's like, I don't even know how much they read of your treatment.
The thing that's frustrating too is like there have been a couple times, the last times I was doing a treatment, and it was like, well, we didn't, it seems like agencies sometimes now aren't even making a recommend, and they'll just like literally give the three treatments to the client and have them,
and
choose,
let them choose,
which that seems a little crazy to me too.
It's very crazy.
Personal self-serving thing. Cause I'm waiting. I'm the recommend on a job that I'm really hoping for. Have you ever been the recommend and not get the job?
Yes.
Yeah. Me
great.
Too.
Great. Cool.
But
to an incumbent.
That
yeah.
Oh, that said, yeah. I know that agencies tell more than one person they're the recommend sometimes.
I'm sure. Oh, really?
Like,
oh, God.
They're at sweet talking.
If it was an even playing field, like maybe I'd feel differently about it, but it's just like a lot of directors are not doing their own treatments.
Mm-hmm.
You can spend, like there have been times where I was busy and I'd sure. pay for a treatment, or a production company's like, you don't like, I'll say I don't do treatments, and they're like, we understand that, but like we have to submit a treatment, so we're going to get a writer and we're going to get an image puller, and you don't have anything to, you don't have to do anything with it. And I'm like, fine,
just talk to them.
So I'll do that, and then I'll get it back, and I'll look at it, and I'll say, this is the last time this happened. I was like, there's no way you can put my name on this.
Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with you.
Right. I was like, you can write like director colon Ira Rosenzweig, but you cannot write treatment by Ira Rosen, right. This is not
you
anything.
Didn't do it. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And so I've now just like after trying different permutations and combinations of this, I've just landed on I'm not doing a treatment.
Yeah.
So, oh,
man, I love it.
Well, can I want to go on one other different tangent.
Cause sure.
You talked about how you didn't come up in comedy and how you do a lot of comedy. And I've noticed through our podcast, and it very much could be because of Matt and my network of people, but what percentage of like working directors do you guys think do comedy? I feel like 75%.
Right? All of the ones we, I think that's purely just our networks. And also coming up in digital, would like Orin and I did.
Right.
There's not a drama.com.
Right.
You know, there's not like you have to just go to direct one act in New York or whatever.
Right.
So I think that's where.
Right. But when it comes to like commercials or short form or promos or branded things, like we're three comedy people, comedy directors. Like, there are just so many comedy directors, right? Aren't we just?
Right.
Aren't there too many of us?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, should I switch?
Yes.
Should I switch to drama and start booking way more work?
Yeah. If you could do lifestyle, I think.
Oh, any kid with a 5D can do lifestyle.
Yeah. I don't know.
Lifestyle.
I don't know if this necessarily applies to commercials, but I think like with movies like Get Out and stuff like that, where you know you see that you can make like a horror movie and infuse it with some comedy, and like it becomes more relatable in some ways. Like I think more people realize that you can kind of like mix genres, and so. Mm-hmm. I think there's more of an appetite for comedy in some sense, but in the commercial space, no, I think you're right. There are a ton of comedy directors, but yeah, it's probably because of just our
who
network.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so are you doing anything outside of the commercial space?
Yeah. So I did a couple of series last year.
And like episodic
stuff.
Like a single episode.
So there were two things. So one, I did a prequel for the show Trial and Error, the John Lithgow show. Yeah, it was season one on NBC. So I did a prequel digital series that Lithgow was in, which was great. I was lucky enough to directed it in another case of like once I got the job to direct it. I didn't write it, but I did all the posts for it too. So I edited and.
And what was the format? How many episodes and how long?
That was four episodes. I mean, the whole thing was like 20 minutes total. So like it was just like five 4-minute episodes or something like that. But we shot it over like 2 or 3 days, something like that.
And did it run up to the beginning of the season?
It was actually, it aired towards the end of the season. So it actually took the form of like Dateline. So it was like an unearthed VHS copy of like a Dateline type show about the murder of Lithgow's character's first wife. Because in the show, he murdered another wife, and there was a backstory about the first one. So that was really fun. And then I did a series. I did three episodes of a series for Go 90 for New Form.
Oh, my goodness.
Wait,
Mr. Student Body President?
Yes.
That's so funny.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I was up for that.
Didn't Jack Ferry direct?
It was Jack and Ryan. Yeah. They did all of season one, and then they got a 30-episode order for season two. Yeah. So they did the first and the last episodes, and then had six.
Yeah.
I think six other directors.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And how did they find you?
That was through my agency. ICM got me that meeting, and it was crazy. I mean, we shot 45 pages in 5 days.
That's fine. Yeah.
But it was like, you know,
from a guy that does 15 seconds in 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah. But so that, I mean, that was interesting. That was my first taste of like episodic directing. Yeah. And then, you know, I have a few movies in the works at different places. I'm going to actually shoot a short film, hopefully in probably end of January, maybe February.
January's the season, right?
Is it?
Yeah. Because no one's working.
That's right? True.
Well, I don't know. Is that true in the commercial world?
Yeah, I guess
maybe. Or more like the scripted narrative world?
Good question. I mean, scripted, like, I mean, everybody takes the last 2-3 weeks of the year off.
Yeah. But right, but also like Sundance and like there's like a lot of TV going on. And
yeah, I mean, honestly, it's just kind of like I've been up for a bunch of movies where, I mean, it's weird because I'm 40 now and like if it's killing me that I'm like 40 and I haven't directed a movie yet.
Yeah,
and so. I've been picky though. Like when it comes to commercials and promos, I'll direct anything. I mean,
right. It's like a couple weeks of your life.
Yeah. I've been very picky about features and the ones that I have gone after, I've gotten very close to, and it's always, I always lose to someone who's made a feature. Mm-hmm. And so I've realized that like, if I'm not going to make a feature right now, if I make like a 20-minute, just like awesome short that like shows how I would do a feature, I think it'll be a lot easier to get those jobs. Plus, you know, I think it'll just be good for the soul to do something like I don't have anyone over my shoulder telling me to do another take of something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and what genre do you want to work in?
It's basically, well, this is, I guess I would say it's like, this is 40 through like a Black Mirror lens.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Cause I never, you know, as I said, I never intended to do comedy, but I've realized I'm good at it. So, and if I'm going to make my first thing, it should probably be have some kind of comedy element to it. But, I'm basically the crew that I usually work with, I'll hit them up to do this and, you know, a lot of favors, but I want to find one of the producers that I work with to try to, you know, produce it and just go off and make it.
Just shoot it, man.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Godspeed. Good luck.
Thank you.
Keep us posted.
I will.
Yeah.
Are you going to call any of these people to be in your short?
Which people?
Kevin Hart. I hear he's available now.
I actually just came from his house.
Alec Baldwin. Yeah. Yeah. Zach
Alec
Efron.
Alec and I, we went out, you know, last weekend.
Yeah.
The Rock.
Close with everybody you're talking to about.
Is this Daniel Radcliffe in the Kia Scent Lab?
No, that's Ed Herbstman. Comedic genius.
Oh, he kind of looks like Daniel Radcliffe.
A little bit.
Jack Black. These are all people that Ira's worked with.
Yeah, the celebrity.
Blake Shelton. Is he a really nice guy? And does he point to himself all the time?
Super duper nice guy. Great guy.
He's my celebrity crush.
Oh, yeah?
No.
You'd be even more in love with him if you met him.
I'll tell you, I am up for this job at Disney that has like some actors from a Disney movie that aren't necessarily famous to anyone, but maybe some kids would know them. And
right.
The guy that was like interviewing me was looking at my website. He's like, "Oh, you've worked with some celebrity talent. This will really help you, in terms of like your odds of getting the job." And I'm like, okay. Actually, working with celebrities is less helpful for a director because right. they're not like normal them. Actors.
Right. You can only push them so far.
Yeah. You have them for a very little time. Right. I'd say 50% of the time, they don't let you talk to them before you get to set.
Right.
Which is so weird. Because they want to talk to you and you want to talk to them, but 16 people in the middle decided that they don't want to waste their time with you.
Well, it depends. Some can be really into it, and I've noticed, but for the most part, it's like, that you're told they've seen the scripts, but they haven't ever looked at the scripts. And
Of course.
Yeah, you're told they love the script.
Right.
They're like, why does it say this? This doesn't make sense.
Yes.
Yeah. When you did Alec Baldwin, he does like pretty much like a Donald Trump impression.
Right.
Was that just like his go-to presidential impression, or was that the whole premise?
No, I mean, that was the premise. I mean, my friend Brian Trishon wrote that spot, and they had a lot of different ideas that they presented to him before that. Someone at Paramount didn't like the George Trumpington thing at all. They're like, Alec does not want to do Trump anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even want to send it to him. They sent him like 7 ideas every day. No. This is literally 36 hours before the shoot. They've, out of desperation, sent him that script. He's like, I love it. Let's do it. And so, he shows up. I had worked with him before, probably like 10 years ago, though. And I said to him, I was like, look, you've done like, this like the back of your hand. Like, do you even want notes from me? He's like, yeah, definitely. He's like, but we had like 30 minutes to do it. So he was great. I mean,
I have one final question for you in terms of promos and then segueing into TV, because you have these relationships with all these awesome creative directors. They see you as the promo guy, Ira promo guy,
but also at TV studios.
Right? So you're in the building, right?
Right.
Do you have any apprehension about getting pigeonholed as a promo director when you want to be directing episodes of those TV shows?
Well, honestly, I don't want to be directing the TV episode.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
I shouldn't say that so flat out, like definitively.
You don't want to fight for that work.
Right. I would love to create TV shows, but I don't know how much of my interest lies in just coming in to do episodic work.
It's like, I don't want to do an episode of The Good Place or whatever.
Right, And it's on Hulu and also
NBC.
Yeah. And by the way, someone just emailed us. They saw you were going to be on the podcast tonight and wanted to see if you wanted to direct an episode of that, but I will tell them. Not interested.
What are you but no, so yeah, I mean, I would give it, I would like to try it out a few more times, but I'm not sure that's
it's not for you.
Yeah, it may not be.
Oh, but, well, that's great then.
Yeah, I mean, but like honestly, like you're pigeonholed immediately. You the second you do something. So like, I did a documentary. I was a documentary guy, based on what? Nothing. Like now I'm a comedy director. I couldn't possibly do anything else. I mean, luckily the cool thing with promos is like a lot of times people just want to work with you and there's more leeway. So it's like, I have done more dramatic spots also.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. You're not so categorized like you are in commercials, but, I used to really bother me, but it's like, it's my job to just convince people that I'm not what they think I am.
Yeah. You know I pigeonholed you just based on your name. You walked in here and blew my mind.
That's very valid.
Awesome. Well, Ira, thank you so much. Shall we hop into unpaid endorsements?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
Unpaid endorsements.
So something that I've been doing for the last year, I think it's pretty obvious, and I'm sure a lot of people do it, but just saying it since we talked about editing a lot, is I have a hard drive. It's like a 2 terabyte Lacy portable hard drive, and it has all my favorite stuff on it. Sound effects. I have 600 gigs of sound effects, music that I really like, graphics, elements like action things, all these things, templates, fonts, everything that I ever use when I edit. And whenever I go to any edit session, I always bring it with me. And 9 times out of 10, I say I think I have something great for that. Or I'll literally
smoke. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Connect it to my laptop and find sound effects. And I'll be like, use this one. And I'll airdrop it to the editor. Mm-hmm. Because I just like to have my things with me. And I find that it lets me work a lot faster when I'm working with other people. So, you know, just have a hard drive. Nowadays, there's so you can get like a 2 terabyte Lacy hard drive for like $80.
Really? You can get 4 for $150.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But yeah, just bringing kind of your library of your favorite editing tools is like kind of my endorsement. It's an obvious one, but if you want a copy of mine, send $100 to Just Shoot It, and I'll send you a copy of my drive.
And the self-addressed stamped envelope.
Yeah, an SASE.
And
a
Lacy drive.
Yeah. Cool.
Awesome.
You guys got anything?
Ira, what you got?
So I just saw a short film that kind of blew me away. It was sent to me by my friend Sean Connery, who's a DP who shot...
Sean Connery?
Connety.
Boo.
He shoots a lot of spots. Yeah. He shot a few of my spots. And anyway, he sent me this short he did called Incel. And the director, I think his name is John Marizaldi. It blew me away. It is one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen. Do you guys know what incels are?
Yeah, involuntarily celibate people.
Yes.
Oh. My wife and I are incels.
my wife actually made that joke to me today as well. Anyway, it's I knew nothing about this whole subculture, and it kind of gets into kind of the psychology of people who do these mass shootings, and not that they're all the same, but there is kind of a profile that seems
right. Well, there's
similar.
One guy, right, that was like the UC Santa Barbara guy.
I think.
Oh, right.
I think the Sandy Hook guy as
oh,
well.
Really? Oh,
yeah,
man.
I think there's a few. So it's a really disturbing subculture and. Very thought-provoking. So I think it was a Vimeo staff pick. So if you go to Vimeo and type in incel,
I-N-C-E-L.
Yeah, and we'll have it on our show notes as well.
Yeah. So no, I was really, really impressed by it.
Awesome. Well, you know, I'm going to take you up on the short tip, actually, because I just saw a great one.
Ooh, did you name your short a gray one so that if someone is looking for a great one, they might accidentally find yours?
No, but I did think of making sure to have... the first two words be early in the alphabet.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. When you titled it?
You didn't do like star at.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's exactly. Why it's called A. That's why you spell gray, G-R-A-Y, because it'll come a little bit before G-R-E-Y.
Well, so also, we're really getting into it. Originally, I was thinking of it with an E, but that is the British style of spelling.
Actually. G-R-E-Y is British?
Yeah. So
I thought they were just interchangeably.
They are. They're both correct in American English, mm-hmm. but... E is technically the British style of spelling, and I think
so. When you want to seem more intelligent, that's how you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, director F. Gary Gray is with an A.
Well, my short
it blows the whole thing up.
Yeah, never mind.
Wait, the Gray. Hold on, let me look up one more. The movie, The Gray, Liam Neeson.
E.
British E. Yeah, or Irish or whatever he is.
Well, speaking of shorts that start with an A, Alex and the Handyman was sent to me by a friend, and it's a short comedy. It's an NYU grad film. Which makes me very jealous, but it's about a young boy who is neglected by his mother and falls in love with the handyman, and kind of like hilarious, sad, twisted, weird stuff happens, basically. And I think the thing I love about the film the most is that all of the performances are really specific in the same way. You know, they're all in the exact same movie, but it's a very unique style of performance. Mm-hmm. I think especially the little boy who plays Alex is such a kind of unique performer that it's interesting that everyone else kind of calibrates to him. And also it's just a left turn after left turn after left turn. So you never know exactly where it's going, even though it still feels a little familiar. Mm-hmm. And it's great. So Alex and the Handyman.
Cool. Well, if we want to find out more about you, Ira, you have an awesome website.
Yeah. www.irarosenzweig.com. RosenSweig.com. And my production company is wavemakercreative.com.
And are you on social media?
I am on social media. I'm on Facebook. I actually just started an Instagram account.
Oh.
Like yesterday.
Well, we will tag you in the Instagram post.
Perfect.
What is it? At Ira Rosenzweig?
I think, yeah. I think it's just Ira Rosenzweig.
You can follow... Just Shoot It on all of the social media apps.
We're at Just Shoot It Pod.
At Just Shoot It Pod. And you can visit us online at justshootitpod.com.
If you have any questions or comments about this episode or for Ira or anything you think, email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. We love to hear your thoughts. And if you want to find me on Instagram, I'm at O Kaplan.
At O Kaplan. And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow. This episode was edited by Jay McCullough. It's produced by Madeline Rosewatt, and our webmaster is Ewan Williams. Make sure you leave an iTunes review. That's how other people discover the show and grows our community. Thanks, everyone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.